Headline, U.S. Whore Today. IRS setting tax breaks for hybrids. Hybrid car buyers are a step closer to finding out how... Hybrid car buyers are a step closer to finding out for sure how much of a tax credit they're eligible to receive under a new law. The IRS has just issued guidelines establishing rules and a protocol for automakers to get their gasoline electric hybrids certified as eligible for the credit. Now it's up to automakers to submit the paperwork. The IRS will then grant or deny the credit. The cleanest, gas, thriftiest vehicles will be eligible for a tax cut of up to $3,400 off the bottom line of most buyers' tax bills. Starting this month, the credit replaces a $2,000 tax deduction that wasn't as lucrative for most because it simply reduced the buyer's taxable income rather than the tax bill directly. This is going to provide much-needed certainty to Americans who are purchasing these vehicles. Treasury Secretary John Snow, R. Bastard, announced in Detroit. It means they'll be able to rely on this manufacturer's certification when they. Remember how different this is from when Bush first got in office? The son of a bitch gave out these massive, it was $80,000 or $100,000 tax break if you bought a giant gas-guzzling Hummer. Can you believe that? He did the exact opposite. Oh, now I guess he's, as the Republicans are in more and more trouble at the polls, he's trying to act like a semi-responsible person now. But think how totally irresponsible it was for him to give away these, can you believe, $100,000 tax break to buy a Hummer? I don't understand. Is that a free Hummer? Hummers don't cost $100,000. And I could be wrong. It might only have been $80,000. But I just don't understand how... Why in the hell would they encourage people to buy the gas guzzlers when we got boys in Iraq dying to stabilize the price of gas, which, of course, has gone up because Bush is in charge? Son of a bitch, they just get everything backwards. And once again, the Democrats just stand there and say, that's okay with me. I don't have a problem with it. Whatever Bush wants to do. Jesus, that makes me pissed off. What will it take to get the Democrats to stand up and do something? Oh, here's the headline. This is for Danny in Detroit. North America turnaround is GM's, quote, absolute top priority. Automaker to be very conservative on earnings and sales. Well, you know, what I suggest you guys do is buy a Toyota Camry and take it apart and see how it works and then build a car as close to that as you can. Elsewhere in this episode, I told you about my experience with a rental in Arizona, and it pissed me off. It was a crappy car. Headline, meth cases put strain on emergency room. Meth cases put strain on emergency rooms around the country, leading cause of drug-related visits. What is leading cause of drug-related visits? Oh, okay, they're saying the meth is, of all drug-related visits, meth is the leading cause. Methamphetamine accounts for more emergency room visits than any other drug, a survey released today by Nobody Cares. The survey of 200 hospitals run or funded by counties in 39 states and D.C. shows that 47% said methamphetamine is the top illicit drug involved in emergency room visits, 16% said marijuana, 15% said cocaine. Now, which part of that was the craziest? 15% of the emergency room visits were due to what? Marijuana, what, overdoses? How the hell do you overdose on marijuana? How can you smoke too much marijuana? I guess if you've got something better than the Mexican dirt weed we get in Oklahoma, I guess, is it possible? Have you ever in your life heard of someone that smoked pot and got so high they had to be taken to the emergency room? Have you ever heard that? That's what USA Today is trying to tell us here. 15% of the drug problems that go to the emergency room is marijuana. That doesn't make any damn sense at all. Now, if you talk about some kids that, I don't know, if you got high and cut yourself and went to the emergency room, why would you bother to mention, oh, by the way, sir, I'm on dope. Please write that down, and if you would, call a cop, please. No, see, that doesn't make any sense. But nothing makes sense here. They got so high, they said, take me to the emergency room. That doesn't make any sense. And don't make a damn bit of sense, not even a little bit. But if USA Today said it, it must be true, right? Headline, no ticket for Schwarzenegger's wild ride. California Governor Musselhead won't get a traffic citation for riding his Harley without a license when he collided with a car, police chief said. Police referred the case to the city attorney, saying the governor didn't have the proper endorsement on his license to operate a motorcycle. City's attorney's office said it's up to the police to decide. Officer Jason Lee, LAPD spokesman, said the police wouldn't cite Musselhead because an officer didn't witness the accident Sunday. Oh, please. Please, would you quit lying to me? Get your hand out of my pants. I don't like it when you do that. The cops did witness the accident. So you can't get a ticket for a wreck without a license if a cop didn't witness it? So there's Schwarzenegger with his 15 stitches in his lip and a broken motorcycle. And the witness, the lady that he ran into, duh, I think she might have been a witness. But now the cops, illegally for sure, have decided that they can't give someone a ticket because they didn't witness the accident. Oh my God, did they really say that? Somebody just shoot me. Just shoot me. The governor's spokesperson said he'll get the proper license. Oh, I see. Now that you've been caught, you're sorry, and you'll make it better. Trial opens for killer of pedophile priest. A Massachusetts prisoner strangled pedophile and former priest John Gogan to save the children, unquote. Both sides in his trial agreed in... Oh, there's a period there. Another one. Both sides in his trial agreed in opening statements, but they differed over whether he should be convicted of murder. Prosecutor said Joseph Druce had planned a 2003 killing in Gowan's cell for weeks. Druce's lawyer, John LaChance, said his client was suffering from mental illness and driven by an irresistible impulse. Hey, we all have those. You know how many times I wanted to strangle somebody? But I haven't yet. Gogan was serving a 9 to 10 year sentence for groping a 10-year-old boy, but had been accused of molesting 150 boys. His case sparked a clergy sex abuse crisis. No, the sex abuse crisis in the Catholic Church has been going on for decades and centuries and millennia. It's got very little to do with Gogan. These weird pervert priests, what is wrong with them? Here I got this other story. Bishop declares he was abused by priest. Molestation by priest is reason he supports accuser's lawsuit. 75-year-old Detroit Catholic bishop stunned his church, Ohio legislators, and victim of sexual abuse nationwide Wednesday when he revealed one reason he supports victims' rights to sue, no matter how long ago the abuse occurred. He was molested by a priest more than 60 years ago. Oh, no, no. I thought it began with this Father Gogan here. Yeah, yeah. Now it turns out 60 years ago it was going on. And are you still sending your money to the Catholics? When you go to church on Sunday, do you drop a check in there? I think you should drop on a piece of paper that says, not until every priest in this country has taken the absolutely zero, whatever that's called, zero tolerance pledge in writing. Make them put it in writing. Make them publish it. That'll have these framed letters on the church walls. So when you walk into church, you can see there's a signed letter by the guy who's about to say Mass guaranteeing that he resigns if any tolerance is broken there, whatever the phrase. When he was a 14-year-old student in a high school seminary, Gumbleton said a professor in his 40s took him to a cottage, wrestled with him, and put his hands down his pants. I knew it wasn't right, and I didn't want to happen anymore, he said in an interview. Well, wait, they changed priest to professor here. But isn't that crazy that he was molested by a priest, so he became one? That's just a little too weird for me. Is it weird enough for you? Headline, grand jury to probe hospitals. This might accidentally turn into some bad language here because it pisses me off. New Orleans looks at patient's death, awaits state review. The district attorney in New Orleans plans to impanel a grand jury by the end of the month to investigate whether patients at local hospitals were euthanized or otherwise abused during the desperate days after Katrina flooded the city. Orleans Parish District Attorney Eddie Jordan says his investigation would complement a probe by State Attorney General whose office has been reviewing about 215 deaths at nursing homes and hospitals across the New Orleans area. A state investigation focuses on 5 hospitals and 10 nursing homes. Among them, we don't care the names. A state probe of the hospitals examining whether critically ill patients were given lethal doses of painkiller to end their suffering after power failures and rising floodwaters trapped the patients, hospital staff, and others stifling hot facilities. Now, maybe we disagree on this. I think I can make a decent case. How in the hell are you going to penalize the nurses and the doctors for doing what they did? The way I heard it, there was these roving... Because the government let them down. You know, the government exists to, I guess, primarily to keep invaders out. But then number two is to ensure order. And so when the government disappears and there is no order and you got roving gangs of armed men doing what they wanted, now what the hell are you going to do? Let's assume they don't want to rape dead people. Let's assume that for a minute. But if they're going crazy in the hospitals, shooting and raping and stealing drugs or whatever they're doing, aren't you doing the critically ill patient a favor by getting him out of the way of that danger? I don't see how you can hold these people responsible. If you've got abuse, if there's some kind of evidence of abuse, or they can somehow show that they killed this guy because the nursing home was in his inheritance or something, maybe you got a situation there. But I don't see how, because the government failed, these people were put in that position against their will. This is nothing they sought to do. When the government went AWOL and Bush didn't show up and the city was flooded and there was no law, there was no order, there was no nothing, so people had to fend for themselves, don't see how you can punish them for that now. Editorial in the U.S. Whore Today, Plastic Shock. In the past few weeks, just as consumers were racking up Christmas bills, many got socked with significantly higher minimum payments on their credit cards. Handled differently, this could have benefited cardholders. Debt gets paid off faster, consumers save gobs of interest, but leave it to the federal regulators and the banking industry, sons of bitches, to mess up a good thing. They caught cash-short consumers by surprise. In one example cited by USA Today reporter Kathy Chu, Stephen Weinstock of Brooklyn saw his minimum payment nearly triple to $220 last month. The story behind the increases goes back to 2003 when regulators issued guidance telling banks to adjust minimum payments so consumers would pay down debts faster. Credit card debt had soared in the United States, and banks had eased minimum payments, making it easier for people to get even deeper in the hock. That's profitable for them and disastrous for maxed out consumers. A consumer paying a typical 2% maximum on a $5,000 debt at 17% interest would take nearly 30 years to pay it off. The bastards. 30 years. And that's for $5,000. I bet a lot of you owe more than $5,000 on your credit cards. And they're also talking about 17%. When in truth, it's close to 30. And you know what? They've got these automatic kickers. I forget what they're called. But if they see that you're looking at cars, say you're looking for a car and you go to Jones Chevrolet and you go to Smith Chevrolet and they think, hey, look at Bart. He's looking at cars. We better raise his interest. The sons of bitches. Can you believe that? They have a contract that nobody reads because you have to be a tax lawyer to have a chance at understanding it. But in the contract, it says we can do whatever we want. You know, we're going to put a sign up that says 0% interest for 6 months. So you transfer some money over there thinking you're going to save money. Then they think that you might be looking for a car, so they raise you to 30%. The bastards, and they can do that legally. So this consumer paying 2% on a $5,000 debt at 17% interest would take nearly 30 years to pay it off while shelling out about $10,000 in interest. So you borrowed $5,000 and you had to pay back $15,000. Can't you get a better deal from the mob? Doubling the minimum payment to 4% clears the debt in less than 10 years, saving $7,500. In some circumstances, the minimum payments were an even worse deal. They didn't cover the interest owed, so consumers kept paying but got deeper in debt each month. The guidance from four federal agencies was urgently needed, but instead of ordering the industry to move promptly and phase in the new minimums, regulators left the timing up to the banks. And the greedy sons of bitches that run the banks and the credit card companies, you know what they did? First, they screwed everybody at Christmas time. Thanks. But the worst thing they did, they waited until after this bankruptcy law went into effect. Think how horrible that is. That's why they're called predatory sons of bitches. Who owes money on their credit cards? People without money. So they're the people they attack. It's just like a wolf circling a bunch of sheep. I don't know exactly how that works, but, you know, they see a sheep that doesn't run, you know, that's limping. They go after that guy. This is the biggest corporations in America going after the weakest of the poor people. The sons of bitches. And, of course, the Democrats just let it go. Doesn't it figure? The Democrats just stand by and let them do this, and they don't care. Headline: Two surrender in homeless man's killing. Two teenagers suspected of being involved in the beatings of three homeless men turned themselves in to Fort Lauderdale police, they said. Family lawyers negotiated the surrender of this one dude, 18, and the other dude, 17, who will face murder charges in the death of a homeless man and aggravated battery charges in the beating of a third man, or another man, said Captain We Don't Care, head of the criminal investigation. The teens are also suspected in the beating of a third man, Gregory said. One attack on the Fort Lauderdale campus of Florida was captured on a security camera and replayed nationwide on CNN. The teens involved in the had the right to... The teens involved invoked the right to fuck. The teens involved invoked the right to remain silent. Now here's the question I got for you. What is wrong with these retarded teens? 117, 118, these aren't, you know, 5-year-olds, 3-year-olds that can't understand what they're doing. How much fun can you have beating up a homeless guy? If you saw the tape, there's this guy, he's asleep. He was like between a trash can and the front door of some campus building. He's laying there asleep. And these kids come up with baseball bats, and they beat the crap out of the guy. I don't think he was killed. I think he was just severely beaten. He was in the hospital, may still be. But they just beat this guy crazy, and they laughed and joked the whole time they did it. Now they're going to prison for murder. So my question is, why don't people understand before they commit the crime that they're losing their whole life? Why can't they get it through their head that in prison you don't have good food, you don't have girlfriends, you don't have, I suppose, cable TV? Why don't they understand that you lose everything, maybe your cherry, when you go to prison? What is wrong with them? Now, I can sort of understand, you know, if you're going to rob a bank and leave with $500,000, and you understand up front that, you know, if I get caught, I'm going to have to go to prison, do some time, might have to do 10 years in prison, but on the other hand, I might get this $500,000. So, you know, I can sort of understand that from a criminal kind of point of view. But how much fun can it be to beat up a homeless man? Granted, there's people I would like to take a baseball bat to right now, but I don't want to go to prison, so I'm not going to do that. To beat up a homeless, you know, a guy who's asleep, to beat him up for whatever amount of fun that was, now they're going to prison, maybe for a long time. I mean, hell, they got a murder and two assault with a deadly weapons or whatever they're going to be charged with. But you can't just sweep that under the rug. I mean, this is like a real crime. What is wrong with people that they don't understand? And they did it on camera. Not too bright, but does anyone have any idea why somebody would do that? You're walking down the street and you got nothing and you see a shiny bike. And so you steal a bike. See, again, now you might get something out of that. But to beat up a guy and to trade years or maybe decades of your life for that fun, I just don't understand it. That doesn't make any sense. Okay, so we're at this rustic cabin, the Little Rustic Cabin's Opinion Point, north of Sedona, Arizona. And I'm flipping through the TV. You like I said, they got the satellite. Something I forgot to mention, the We upgraded so we could get the XM radio, the satellite radio, because we knew we were going to be on the road out in the middle of nowhere, and I have to keep up with all the breaking news. You know, I do it all for you. So that's why we upgraded from the convertible to that piece of shit Buick LeSabre. So I said, I need some XM radio. So that's how they fixed me up, because I got to keep up with the news. So when we got to the little rustic cabins at Pinyon Point, you know, you got to see if the TV works. If you check into a hotel or a cabin or a room or whatever and the TV don't work, hey, I need a new room because, you know, it's just not a lot of fun to sit in a quiet, dark room. And first thing on is CNN and Wolf the Whore. And we all know what a whore Wolf Blitzer is. He is such a whore. And he talks like this when he thinks he's saying something important. Oh, Wolf, you're just a bastard, and get away from me. So Wolf's sitting there, and this is a day or two after Sharon had his severe stroke. Fucking, I'm sorry. And Wolf Blitzer, he's going, stay right here for the very latest up-to-the-minute reports on Ariel Sharon. I'm thinking, dude, he's in a coma. What kind of minute-by-minute reports are we going to get? He's in a damn coma. Every 6 hours, maybe remind us that he's in a coma. If something happens, tell us. But stay right here for up-to-the-minute reports for this very important story. And then I saw something I didn't like. Evan Bay is probably a senator, and he's from, where, Indiana? Probably. I think he's from Dan Quayle State. But here we are on CNN that Saturday morning. He's on the TV, live from Iraq, explaining how great the Iraqi army's doing, how the people over there love us, how he was really impressed with the soldiers, the Iraqi soldiers, and how that was coming along. And it was just all peachy and stuff, and I'm thinking, dude, that's a D behind your name. I'm not asking you to lie. I'm asking you to, you know, if you think the Iraqi army's coming along fine, you don't have to get on TV and start screaming that because it makes Bush look good. Now, why would a Democrat who allegedly wants to be president someday, why would he get on TV and start screaming about what a great job Bush is doing in Iraq? I thought it was a big mistake. Evan Bay, I'm sure you're not listening to this, but I know there are some people out there now and then when they say, well, if you don't like Hillary, who do you like? Sometimes they say Evan Bay. Well, Evan Bay lost some points with me last Saturday as I'm flipping through the channels at the Little Rusted Cabin's Opinion Point. I just don't think, again, not asking him to lie. He was traveling with a Republican, you know, it was one of each over there doing some kind of fact-finding bullshit tour. You know, when they take these tours like that, you know they're going to stop, they're going to arrange for a stopover in Paris. You know, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to fly from D.C. to Baghdad. No, they're going to fly from D.C. to New York, and then from there to London, and then stay a day or two, and then go to Paris, stay a day or two, and then maybe Rome, stay a day or two, and then you hit Baghdad on the way home, and say, oh, trip to Baghdad, taxpayer finance, you know, yeah. So him and this other senator over there, and why not let the Republican senator go on the record telling you how great the Iraqi army's doing? You figure he's going to be a shill for Bush. He's going to say, you know, whatever Bush wants him to say either way. But I'm just not sure why the Democrat had to get on TV and explain how great things were going in Iraq. It seemed to be like a big mistake. I mean, if nothing else, if you start saying things like that and these kids sit at home thinking, oh, looks like a major combat has ended. I wonder if I ought to go ahead and sign up. I kind of could use some GI Bill. And, you know, and then he gets over there and find out that Evan Bay maybe got a little optimistic about how great things are going in Iraq. Mr. Bay, I think it's a big mistake. Don't let it happen again. So I'm bouncing through the channels, and I came across a poker game. And trust me, Mrs. Bart loves nothing more than being out of town in a rustic cabin watching me watch TV on poker. Oh, God, she loves that. But actually, it was like 15 minutes left. She was nice enough to let me watch the last 15 minutes. And I'm sitting there looking at the TV, and I'm going, that's Joe. And she says, who's Joe? And I said, this guy I played poker with in Vegas. Look, that's Joe. Turns out Joe's in the World Series. We were watching the 2004 World Series of Poker. And I don't understand this part. Just extrapolating and guessing. Oh, geez. Even by 2004, there was thousands of people. Maybe 2,000, 2,500 people or so in the World Series of Poker. And it cost $10,000 if you just buy your way into the, I don't know, the last round, however it works. But anyway, so we're watching this poker match, and there's just Joe and one other guy, and they're playing the real Texas Hold'em. But, you know, the final table is when you get the six people there, and Joe wasn't one of those people. So that made this some kind of preliminary round. But then again, they said the winner of this match got $300,000. And in the end, Joe ended up losing. But he came in second, so I guess he got $60,000 or $80,000 or maybe $100,000, something like that. But anyway, there's Joe. So I told Mrs. Bart the story about Joe, and I'm going to tell you. And if you want to just fast forward, this will probably take 5-6 minutes, but if you just fast forward, I understand not everybody likes a poker story. Oh, and I'm not sure I should even be telling you this part, because you might get the wrong impression. But last time we were in Vegas, remember we went for the big U2 show. We met Chicago Jim and Tommy and Tally out there. And of course, Chicago Jim's lovely wife, Christine. The six of us went out there, had a good time. But when we weren't at the show, old Bart played him a little poker. And it's so cool, at the Palms, where we stayed, they've got the $4 and $8 poker, which I don't like the $4 poker. Next to it, they have the high-stakes poker room. And you think, ooh, high-stakes poker. I'm just like one of the guys on TV. But they have, it's a $100 buy-in. You can buy a maximum of $500 worth of chips, but you have to buy at least $100. They don't want some asshole sitting down, you know, with $4.50 going to sit down and play some poker. So I got either $100 or $200 worth of chips, and I sit down. And first thing I looked up, and there's Joe. I didn't know Joe's name, but I looked at him, and stupidly, you know, I say a lot of stupid things. As you know, I say and do and write a lot of stupid things. And when I looked at Joe, I immediately recognized him. I said, hey, I played with you before. And he looked at me, and the whole table looked at me like, what kind of idiot are you? And then I realized what I meant was I've only been at this table one other time in my life. It was almost exactly a year ago. And I played you then. And what are the odds that you'd be? And then it dawned on me. He's here all the time. I didn't know then he was good enough to be on TV. But Joe plays there all the time. That's his job. He plays with the Rubes. He goes to the Palms. And he plays these idiots like me who come out from Oklahoma or Omaha or Tennessee or somewhere. They go to Vegas and they say, oh, they tell themselves, ooh, I want to be just like them guys on TV. I want to play some real poker. And the guys on TV did the poker community and indirectly me a big favor because, well, they lied to you exactly. If you want to put it, the exact word would be lying. When on TV, when if a guy's got a 4 and a 7, and he goes all in, they say, oh, what courage. It takes determination. It takes, but that's the, you got to grab the initiative. You got, you know, no, that's really a stupid thing to do. Sure, at some point in the game, you might do that. But that's the gift they gave us on TV. They say, when you go all in, that's a courageous, smart move. And so these donkeys, they go out to Vegas and they they get a 10 and a jack and they go all in and they generally lose. And then it dawned on me. I think I could play professional poker in Las Vegas. Now, if the housing market wasn't so crazy, you know, we'd have to spend, what, $300,000-$400,000 on a house, on a medium, regular kind of house out in Vegas, because the housing market's going crazy. But if it wasn't for that, we might move to Vegas. Well, you got the temperature thing there, too. But the thing is, this last time we were there, I hesitate to tell you this, and I didn't tell you when it happened because I'm just hesitant. But I made some money at the poker table last time. I played 5 sessions. And like I was saying earlier, as my previous testimony will corroborate, when you win a big pot, I think the smart thing is to stand up and leave. And that's what I did. Played 5 sessions and I won 4 of the 5 sessions. And the one I didn't win, I looked down. Mrs. Bart went to see the Van Goghs over at the Bellagio or somewhere. And, you know, we feel pretty safe about her traveling by herself in Vegas because you go from the casino front door into a cab and he deposits you at the casino other casino front door. So, yeah, that worked. So she's overlooking the Picasso's and Chicago Jim's flying into town. He's supposed to call me when he lands. And I look down. I got no phone. So I'm thinking, oh, geez, I got no phone. Mrs. Bart could have a problem. Chicago Jim could be calling. I don't want to be the guy they couldn't reach in Vegas because he's playing poker. So next time I had a half-decent hand, I went all in. I lost my money. Ran upstairs, got the phone. But the other 4 times, I made money each time. There's 2 guys I played before that they were both at this table. You don't go all in with those guys. You go with the idiots. What these idiots do, they buy $300 worth of chips. They get a 10 and a jack. They go all in. They lose. They say, I need chips. And they run over with $300 more. That's who you want to be gambling with. And I learned that lesson. That's how I started making money. It's very empowering I'm sitting there. It was just some of the most fun I ever had. I'm sitting there drinking. I had to drink Patron Añejo because the girl, they don't understand Chinaco. They, you know, she's liable to come back with gin. But Patron, they understand. They got Patron signs on the wall. They understand what Patron Añejo is. So fine. This girl's bringing me double Patron Añejos. I give her a dollar. Now check that out. These are probably 3-4 ounces of really great tasting tequila for a dollar, and I'm sitting here making money at this damn poker game. Now, hey, that's a lot of fun. But anyway, so that's my Joe story. Joe ended up losing that thing. It was on TV, and he got some kind of money, but, the other thing, this is big. Joe has a tell. His name's Joe Awata, A-W-A-T-A, and he has a tell, and I figured this out when I was playing, and then when I watched him on TV, he did the same thing. But when he had a good hand, he bet fast. He grabbed them chips, go stack, 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 stack when he's got a good hand. And I didn't get to see all his hands, but if someone calls him, he's got to flip the cards over to win the pot. So I got to see it. I thought, well, sometimes he bets fast. So how about that? I found a tell on a professional poker player. And next time I go, I might even challenge Joe. Yeah, that's the ticket.